All right, everybody, welcome, welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday, and we have a special edition. This is part two of Sten being in the hot seat, which is just his favorite place to be since the Sorcerer's
Yeah.
Stone. And we actually had a request for hearing a little bit more about an origin story from Sten, kind of what he started in dentistry, business owner standpoint, what he was interested in that brought him here. So last week, if you were with us, we talked about, the baby Sten version right out of dental school, what owning a business looked like. And we're doing part two this week discussing group practice, which is where we are now. So thank you for taking the hot seat for us, Sten, taking one for the team
I
here.
don't think you gave me a choice.
No, I didn't. I sure didn't, but we have to give the people what they want. So when we left off last week, we were discussing that, dentistry has been very polarized, I think, from a business owner's perspective and from a patient's perspective. Dentistry is a little bit behind in medicine in terms of practicing in a group setting. A lot of patients still see that you have that very closely held dental office where the doctor knows you and bakes you cookies every time you come in, or you have a corporate DSO. And so, Sten, what started you thinking about having a group practice and some of the benefits there and trying to bridge the gap between both sides of the polarizing spectrum that we have in dentistry?
Yeah, so I mean, even from in dental school, I always wanted a big practice. I liked the busyness. I liked the opportunity it kind of gave, and I never really thought about a group practice. I think probably until I got a little bit further into it, I honestly probably was thinking more about building my practice up to a point that I could have an associate, or I could justify an associate, I should say, and what that associate turned into, I really didn't know. I really didn't know what the next steps. But I when I finally bought kind of the second half of the practice, my first practice that we owned, I think we hired an associate within a year. Is that right, Jennifer? I think it was pretty close to that.
Pretty close to that.
And
Yep.
it was really on a need base, meaning that my caseload just kind of skyrocketed, and I was doing a lot of cases that were taking a lot of my time, where I had to kind of be focused on bigger cases and surgeries and sedation and things like that, where I wasn't able to bounce around hygiene checks or crown seats, or I got to the point where things, single and double crowns, were just I had to push them off because there was just too much going on. And so it kind of became a necessity standpoint, and I ended up paying that associate a per diem, a fairly high per diem at the time, because I really didn't want her to want more, because it was really there for me, and I thought she was fantastic. It was great, but her primary role, her only role, was to take things off my plate so that I could be more productive. And that was great, but that's also not a way to build a group practice, right? That's not truly a group practice, right? That's you have a kind of a sidekick. And I think where it kind of happened, I think, was when we went to the second practice, and I naively thought that, well, I just do A plus B, and that's what we're gonna make, right? That's I'll just double myself, and I'll be in two places at one time, and hey, no issues can come with that. Boy, was I wrong. So, but that was when I realized, okay, this associate that or this next associate that we're gonna hire, that we were in the process of hiring at the time, they have to be autonomous. To some extent, they have to be have a little more drive. They have to, they have to want to kind of produce. They have to want to build a practice. They have to want to treat the patients the way we do. They have to want to treat the team and work with the team the same way we do. And so, because I can't afford to have someone that is just there with me all the time, it has to be someone that is in a different location where I'm not there. And we didn't have a lot of the cloud-based systems or kind of communication that we do now. And so it was a little bit of hope that it was all happening the way we thought it was. And that kind of made me see a little bit of light that, okay, this isn't really about the dentistry 100%. This is more building a team of doctors, and building people that kind of, row in the same direction and have the same values and goals and things like that. So that's harder. I mean, I can teach people how to do dentistry all day long. I think anyone can. I mean, we can teach people to do dental assistants all day long. Teaching people how to think and act the way you would want them to when you're not there is stressful, and it's hard, and it's really something that is tough. But I saw the potential, that it could bring. And I think that's what really kind of flipped me a little bit. And okay, this is where I need to be. This is where I need to, I need to be the dentist. I need to be the higher producer for the business, but I need to also show them how to operate and how to roll. I need to be a role model. I need to be an example. And I think that was scary and kind of nerve-wracking at the time, especially at that age. I think I was like in my early 30s. And that was a big responsibility at that age and that stage in your career. And so that, but it really kind of opened my eyes. Okay, if I can do this, if I can kind of, maybe take one day away from the clinic or away from the chair and just focus on mentorship or just focus on kind of working on the business. Okay, what did I see as improvements from there? And I started to see some big improvements. I think you and I were working together at the time really closely, and you were still doing chairside with me for a lot of my sedation cases and things like that. But then we would take either a morning or a day and just, focus on, okay, how are we going to really grow this person? How are we going to grow this system? How are we going to change this? And really focusing on taking these aspects of the business and growing them. And I really liked it. So that was kind of what the evolution of it. I like practicing with dentists, and I did. I really didn't get that opportunity too often. My first year out, kind of worked more of in a HMO clinic type setting. I did have a kind of a senior doc that was a prosthodontist that I still keep in touch with, but he, I would talk to him a little bit, but I never really worked chairside with anyone until I had my I practiced in Santa Barbara, and I worked chairside 1 or 2 days a week with a selling doctor, and I liked it. It wasn't that we got along about everything or agreed about everything, but it was just nice to kind of bounce over and talk about a case real quick, or talk about, hey, I'm struggling with this, or hey, what do you think I should do with this? And it kind of worked in both directions too, and I think that's a great way to practice. There's a really I really have a big, not problem, but I really see a lot of issues with solo practices practicing in a silo and thinking from a clinical standpoint and from a business standpoint and from an everything standpoint that we're doing the best, because all we're seeing is we're just comparing ourselves to ourselves. And it's a little bit of an echo chamber, and I really do think that that's a very dangerous place to practice. I think if you're in a solo practice, you really need to seek out mentors, people to kind of, a group, a community that you can be very honest and open with, and share your issues, share your successes with. Because if we're practicing a silo in this echo chamber, we're just going to keep telling ourselves that we're doing great, and or telling ourselves we're doing terribly, and that might not be the case, and we might be doing just the same as everyone else. And so I think that's where I really see the value in group practice. Anyway, it's how that group practice is structured is what was the kind of the next evolution for me. Okay, what does that look like? Did it look like a DSO? Did it look like just a small group practice? What did it look like? And I think that was kind of where, our next, 5, 10 years of evolution happened. So
And I mean, we've been our doctors now, I mean, we have to check ego at the door, right? I mean, if you are just operating in a silo, you're not going to find out if there is a failure, or you're ignoring the failure a lot of times until there's a catastrophic failure, or until you have, a lawsuit sitting on your desk. And, we're very open with our doctors that, hey, guess what? You're going to have an open margin on a crown, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to happen to everybody. If you haven't found one yet, you either aren't doing enough crown preps or you aren't looking hard enough, right? So if we have other doctors that they're going to find that on each other's cases, and we have to be supportive, and not that you're going to throw each other under the bus to patients, or, especially in the area that we're practicing, it is extremely competitive, and our competitors are not supportive of each other. They're hoping that they find your open margin on the crown so that they can fry you, because everyone is just trying, it has a scarcity mindset, and is trying to gain every single patient that they can. And that's not the mindset we want to have within our practice.
100%. I think dentistry is in a profession that eats its young, and I think that's just one of the things I hate the most about. I don't know, I hate a lot of things about the industry, but the one of the things I hate the most is there's a huge scarcity mindset with a lot of practitioners, or a lot of dentists, and a lot of it just comes from them not thinking they have enough. Right? I just need to produce. I need more new patients. I need things. So we're looking. Everyone's sharpening their explorers and kind of looking for everyone else's faults, but we're not looking at our own. And I ate a few of our dentists, actually almost all of our dentists had told me at some point, I'm probably never going to find any mistakes from stent. It's like, yeah, if you don't, you're not looking hard enough. I'm dead serious. I mean, if you're not finding some open margins in the thousands and thousands of crowns I've done in my patients that you're seeing now,
Yeah.
you're not looking hard enough. Because there's no way that you're doing that
Working.
volume of dentistry without having some sort of mistakes. And I'm finding as many as I can, but and I think that's, it goes from the team aspect too. And I mean, a lot of dentists, they don't realize they think they have the perfect team, or they think they have the perfect assistant until they quit. Then you're going, okay, well, maybe this was a sign, maybe that was a little hint that something's happening. But if it's just you and they're just telling you that you're the best because they want to keep their job and you're signing their paychecks, you're really not getting the feedback that you need. And so I think that's, I mean, it's the clinical aspect is one thing, but the kind of leadership and the way we handle and work with a team is in just comparing notes and seeing what we're struggling with and trying to get everyone to kind of chime in about, hey, this is working for me, this isn't working with me. It's a huge advantage. I mean, we're talking every single day with our doctors, and you don't get that in a solo practice. You don't get that in a DSO. And I mean, a lot of it, I should say, but it's really something that I love, and I feel strongly that is the way dentistry should be practiced.
One of the things that I heard you say is talking about imposter syndrome. And I think that everyone has that to some extent. I mean, Sam and I talk about this too, just now we have, decades of experience, but still sometimes that, oh, it's a little scary, to inch out there. And I don't know at what point, if that ever goes away. I don't think that it does, right? If you're trying to be a little bit humble about it, or you say, when you were a kid, you used to think your kindergarten teacher was so old, right? Your kindergarten teacher was 30. Okay. Like that, put in perspective. So when we walk in our practices, our team is seeing us as leaders, whether we think that we're ready for that position or not. Your associate doctors are looking to the senior doc as a leader, whether you're 30, 50, whatever it is, that they're looking to you to lead the ship, lead the charge. If it's going down, they're looking for you to stay calm in the chaos and not, panic. And that's the reality of where we are. Patients are looking to you for the same thing, right? People are coming and paying money for your expertise. They're not looking for you to, well, maybe we should do this and maybe we should do that. No, they're looking for you to make a decision and be decisive about it.
No, I think my name's actually next to the imposter syndrome definition. But I mean, I think it's also one of those things that's done me well in the sense that I've never felt like I made it. I still don't. I never will. And not to say I'm purposely doing that, but I'm looking at what could be, and I'm trying to, as much as I can, kind of always measure backwards. And we talk about it with our doctors a lot too, about, hey, seeing where you've come from and then measuring kind of, where you've come. I think that's really important, but I always know that there's something more. And so I'm always trying to kind of reach for it. It's definitely not a recipe for a great night's sleep always, but it's, I think realizing no one wants to be the guy or the doc that is just thinks he's the cock of the walk and walks in and so cocky and terrible bedside manner and I'm the best. And no one wants to be that guy. And I shouldn't say no one. I don't want to be that guy. And but I think the flip side of that is just always feeling like you're not good enough. And that's also the kind of the other end of the spectrum that we need to avoid too as well. But it's, I think that kind of healthy pinch of imposter syndrome is going to provide a little bit of that drive for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, the people that are talking about that they are that guy and they are that girl. If you are that guy or that girl, you don't have to say anything about it, right? Like, people know, right?
No,
And it's not something you have to
that's true. I mean,
advertise.
the best don't talk about it. Yeah, they show it, and that's, I learned that early on from my parents and mentors, and it's something I feel pretty strongly about too.
Well, and on that leadership topic, I think a realization we also had with associates coming on board, and yes, there are a couple of buckets, of associates, and we hear this happen, the example that Sten used about having an associate just on a per diem, which we do initially for our doctors, but not forever in perpetuity because that's a different person, right? You can't have an associate that you're looking at who is going to take a leadership role in your practice, potentially become a partner down the road, and treat them like they are just a clock in, clock out employee, right? You can't, those things are disconnected. You can't have the same results in doing that. The flip side is also realizing that you are not going to have an associate walk in the door, experience, non-experience, and just think that all of a sudden your production is going to double, right? Which is also the situation that, you know, we were looking at adding the first associate, especially when it came to adding a location. Well, I'm just bringing in this other doctor, so the production won't be affected. And now we're just going to divide it over two locations, and it's just going to be the same. It's going to be the same. Or, you know, if there's a little bit of a difference, I'll make up the difference and send them. I tried to do that for a while, but it was not quite as successful as that. So having that plan in place, okay, what does it look like to get that associate there? What does it take to build $1 million producing venture? And having that realization that it's never happened overnight with someone who's just not going to walk in the door and there's going to be magic.
No, it doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen very quickly. And
Absolutely.
yeah, and I think there's a time and a place for that career long per diem doctor. And
Yeah.
I think there's a very specific practice model that works really well in, and mine at that time, which was really only a year and a half. And I didn't have the foresight to realize that we were going to grow even beyond that, you know, within a year. But it can work very well. And there are a number of avatars for types of docs that works really well for. But it's nearly impossible to reverse once you start it. So if you have someone on a per diem that's a healthy per diem, that they're just getting fed constantly, you're not reversing that. I'm
No.
sorry, but you're just if you have that avatar of that doc that fits in that role very well,
Yeah.
they're not going to go into the million-dollar producer doc role.
No. No, they are not. No, and I actually have a, it's not in the dental field right now, but I actually have a veterinary office that we're in talks with right now, getting ready to sell their practice, has a very similar situation with an associate that's on a per diem, not producing to cover the per diem, mind you, which that's in and of itself, but she's been on a per diem for 4 or 5 years now. So 80% of the production is coming from the selling doctor who does not want to continue working, wants to retire. Suddenly that practice is not quite as valuable as you think that it is.
So, unless that associate is allowing that doctor to produce
Right.
significantly more than he or she would have otherwise, it just doesn't work. And I don't think a doctor not covering their per diem works ever. But the
No.
only reason that's even close to justifiable is if it's allowing you to boost your hourly significantly than otherwise.
Excellent. So we are going to continue with part three of this next week, leading into the mentorship conversation. So what does this look like now? You have a group practice, you have these doctors who are looking to you, even just one doctor looking to you as a leader. What does that mentorship process look like initially, continually? How have we adapted that for the multiple doctors that we have now? So we'll continue on that conversation next week. In the meantime, if you want to learn about some of the tools that we have, this doctor development program that we've built out, please feel free to reach out to us. We're on all of the social media platforms. You can email us directly at connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com, or our website is pathwaydentalsolutions.com, and we'd be happy to talk through some of those solutions with you. We will be back next week.
All right, see you later.
Bye.